feelings. Welcome to Feel Feelings with Danny and George, the show that talks about feelings and the things that make you feel them.
You don't remember this being embraced? A thing? You don't remember this gang sign that Volkswagen developed?
I was in the Volkswagen gang for a while, and I was never told that I was supposed to throw up signs.
You throw up V and then dub, and you go German engineering. It's a whole thing, dude.
Wow. I feel my 7 years as a Volkswagen customer were spent poorly now that I don't have that.
It's upsetting. Maybe our guest that we have on right now.
Hold on. I'm Danny. You're George. Yeah. This is Feel Felix.
Yeah. Drew, do you remember Volkswagen having like gang signs where you would throw this up?
Oh, shit. Yeah. That was like one of the easy ones.
Yeah. Drew gets me. That's on the top of the guitar we were talking about before I hit record. Just on the top of the guitar instead of like little truss rods. Just got that V-dub gang sign.
Dude, it's weird that your guitar had hands.
It was cool as a kid that, like, remember the kids that could do like the weird thing and it would spell blood with their hands?
Yeah.
And I was like, that guy's clearly in the Bloods. And then I would just be like, I know this one, do like West Side. And that's all I could do.
Yeah, I could do West Side in my sleep, but blood, when you're like using your body to like finagle it to like support your fingers.
I'm like,
your finger
is disjointed. Yeah. I'm not supposed to do that.
What was the other one? Oh, there is it's a blooper in the film Rockstar. That's the name of the movie, right? With Mark Wahlberg. And it's like him peak Marky Mark. And he's playing the lead singer of a band that he loves. And I swear to God, it's in the end credit scene. Mark Wahlberg goes, nah, man, it ain't about this. All right. It's about this. Okay. And like he just switches into Marky Mark mode. And he's from Boston.
The west side of what?
Cahaba.
The west side of Boston is just the rest of Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's the part where I lived, where when I moved there, the guy who had already lived there gave me the tour of people he knew in high school who got shot in these locations.
Yeah. Worcester forever. Maybe that's what he meant. Yeah. Worcester side.
Yeah, Drew Montana, how are you?
Oh yeah, hi, how's it going?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on. This is fun. I got two blunts rolled. I'm ready to talk about feelings with you guys and get high and sad.
Yeah.
Nice.
Makes me nervous.
We did that episode last week, all right?
You are wearing the single greatest sweatshirt I've ever seen. So
Thank you, man.
I don't know that I could let it go without mentioning the Dinosaur Earth Society.
I got Meg Getz on board. I'm hoping I get you guys on board as well. The Earth is dinosaur chicken nugget shaped.
Yeah, I was editing episode of Real Chills, like, yeah. Oh my God.
Well, I was telling Meg real quick, I used to get in like these Facebook flat earth groups just to like troll them and like agree with everything they said. But I think after a while they realized that I was too into it, and they were like, this guy can't be. I'm like, of course it's flat. The earth is only 7 inches deep. And they'd be like, this guy's nuts. And then, dude, there was another link in that group to this other guy that's like, I'm starting a new one. It's dinosaur shaped. And I'm like, I'm with this guy now. Dude. Yeah, this is my new leader.
I was jumping in on the giraffes aren't real threads. And I was like, all right. Yeah. Okay. And then it kind of hit a wall. And then out of that came the birds aren't real. And I'm like, you know, I think I believe birds aren't real more than I believe giraffes aren't real. Let me follow this where it goes now.
Yeah. Dude, I'm convinced.
See, that's the trouble with these conspiracy theory stuff, because like I'll have fun with them. I love having fun with conspiracy theories. That's the part that I love about shit like that. But then I'll bring it up to my dad, who just buys everything hook, line, and sinker. And I'm like, no, we're having fun.
Like, yeah.
Please don't start telling me about biblical giants hunting U.S. soldiers in the mountains of Iraq. That's not real. You heard that on the radio.
Well, and most conspiracies now are like my dad's like fucking, there's a shop in D.C. where they're selling kids and pizza. And I'm like, I don't think that's happening, man. I don't know.
Like, my favorite part about that one is like, it's all happening in the basement. And that place doesn't have a basement.
Doesn't have a basement. Yeah. He's like, look at the menu. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Pepperoni means something different in DC.
Yeah, dude. No, there is. See, because like I look into all of them because I think they're funny. And like I just kind of gas up like the dinosaur Earth ones and like because they're more fun than regular life. But yeah. Somebody was saying that like Obama did a meeting where he ordered hot dogs for the food, and hot dogs meant like kids or something, and he ordered like 20,000 kids. I'm like, where'd he get them? Like, that's a lot of fucking
we'd know it sounds 20, like it was probably kids.
Yeah.
And Dollar Dog Night just kills so many kids.
Oh my god, it just reminds me of that episode of The Simpsons where they find out that like the kids are getting sent to detention being eaten. It's like a Treehouse of Horrors episode, and it's best line of that whole thing is Bart and Maggie run downstairs to tell Marge that's like the teachers are eating the students at school, and Marge just shuts them down and is like, Lisa, Bart, you're 8 and 10 years old. I cannot be fighting all your battles for you. Oh, it's so good. But yeah, no, conspiracy theories, they're the best, and it's fun to just enjoy them. Like, and I like the weird ones that are almost like they don't go anywhere bad. It's just I can buy into that completely. I think Kyle Kinane has a joke how he's like talks about how people are saying that there's like gonna fire Jewish space lasers, and his conspiracy theory is like, yeah, and I'm pretty sure Trader Joe's makes their parking lot small enough so it always looks like they're busy in there, and it's always hard to get a parking spot at Trader Joe's. Like, that I believe.
Yeah, that's a good conspiracy. Yeah,
that's just corporate.
Yeah, that's just how that's
a
like
a good model. Yeah.
Yeah, IKEA makes you walk throughout the entire store. That's not a conspiracy. They designed it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, shopping malls are literally designed so you get lost. Like, that's it. Like, it's a conspiracy theory until people are like, no, I'm the designer of this place. And yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm sorry. By the way, everyone, I am thoroughly happy to be doing my show right now, but I did just get straight up boosted an hour before this.
Oh,
shit.
And I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it already. I don't know how to have it so quickly.
Dose 4 or dose 3?
Dose 3.
Okay. I know some people that are on 4 now, and I'm like, man.
That's too eager. That's
yeah.
Too,
yeah.
You got, but like, you got your first too early if you're running through them that quickly. Yeah.
I mean, I got my first two before anybody else I know, and I still haven't got my third yet. So
I haven't gotten it either, man. It's I feel fine. I got the first two. My card still works to get me in places. And
yeah,
that's they're like, you need this next one. I'm like, fuck, I got to get the next one.
Yeah,
that's going to be the sign for me. Like, that's like, I haven't got my car inspected. And it's because no cop has told me, here's the money you owe me for not having done that.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like parking tickets.
Yeah.
Except that ticket is COVID. Yeah. No, we just have like we've been planning on doing stuff, and Casey got hers, but Casey got hers the day, like 2 days after she contracted the virus. So she had no symptoms, and then all of a sudden the booster hit her like a ton of bricks. We're like, what's wrong?
Oh, I thought
you
weren't supposed to. I was scheduling mine for this weekend, but then I got COVID.
She didn't know she had COVID. She just had booked the appointment beforehand, and then all of her booster symptoms were like heightened. She was out of commission for like 4 days. And I was like, there's no way the booster can tank someone like this. And then she took a test and it came back positive. So I guess like she just, you know, mixed fire with fire and was just like, let's see if this works.
And what, she got in the fire?
She got fire. She got the fire tribe version of the COVID vaccine.
I mean, it's the good guys in the end. So, right. So
yeah,
it's all good.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no. So if I drown out or you hear a thud, don't worry about George. Just continue on without me.
We'll be fine.
We just did the Dan is sick episode. We'll just have to turn this into the George is sick episode.
Honestly, you know, a friend of the show, Luke Robers, who's on another show on this network, Get in the Garage, fantastic. He always would tell me that like I would miss band practice all the time because I was sick. I never realized I was just always a sick kid, but my parents didn't have insurance. So they're like, you're not sick. Go to school. You need to go to school. Like, I think I have a really poor immune system where like I had to miss a ton of shit, but I went to school with swine flu because my mom was like, no, you don't. You do not have swine flu. Go.
Yeah. I was raised very similar, but like, I don't know why. Cause we always had insurance. We were fine. Like we were in that bracket where everything was pretty, pretty okay for us. But like, even then my parents were like, no, you're not sick. Like, yeah. get up.
Yo, if my kid ever comes up to me and is like, hey, I'm not really feeling good. I think I shouldn't have the day at school. I'm going to tell him no, but I'm going to like be like, thank you for being honest, but you have to go to school. We don't have insurance. I know my limits. I know I'm not going to be able to afford this kid.
Yeah, like my parents, my brother collapsed his lung and he went to bed like, my chest hurts. And then it was like hours later that they were like, oh, your chest still hurts? Maybe we should look into this for real. No.
That was like when Mookie Wilson broke my sister's finger. It's freaking a real Mookie story. Broke Mookie my sister's pinky, and she didn't tell us about it until we got home. She was afraid to rat on Mookie Wilson.
He Wait. Sounds scary. I feel her on this. He sounds like he's connected. He's got uncles.
Wait, so how did Mookie Wilson break your sister?
So when my whole family worked for like State Farm Insurance in New York, they would do this thing because I guess you can't afford Yankee Stadium, but you can afford Shea Stadium. So they did like a day on the field, State Farm sponsored.
So that's
day.
How you end up with a Met.
Yeah, you get the Mets. You do not get the fucking Yankees. So they all took us to Shea, and then all the kids, while the State Farm agents had like their, you know, cocktails or something in a skybox somewhere, they're like, we're taking all the kids on a tour, and then a couple of like the batting coaches and stuff are gonna like take the kids out on the field and show them how to throw a ball and how to hit a ball. It's gonna be great fun. And they went out and Mookie Wilson was like showing my sister how to hit a ball with a bat, but like made her loop her fingers around like you hold a golf club holding the bat.
That's insane.
And then when she went to swing, it like cracked her fingers sideways. So it was just like this, like at a right angle for the rest of the game. And then on the ride home, it was like turning purple. And she finally said, hey, I think I hurt my finger.
I'm pretty sure he's a hitting coach.
8 hours ago.
Also, I don't know if that's his fault. I think that's just like one of those dumb things you tell kids to be like, there's no way they'll actually do this. Yeah. And then he saw her do it. He's like, what the fuck? I gotta go.
Yeah, no, it's time for me to go home, guys. You enjoy the game.
That was like 1 year I was in a sled accident where we were sledding down just an icy driveway, and on either side was just woods. And I tumbled off the driveway and it like launched me, like it like catapulted me off the sled, and I was just rolling, and I rolled over like a broken corn stalk, like the last little nub that's like hard as hell, and it ripped my knee inside out. And I didn't even notice. I just got up and started like running around with my friends again. And it wasn't until hours later that I was sitting and I had my knees up to my face that I saw a hole in my snowsuit, and then was like, oh, let's see how deep this goes. And it went like through my knee that I was like, oh, guys, I think I need to get this fixed.
Dude, that adrenaline you get from sledding is unlike anything else. It's like sledding and then war. They're the only two things that can keep a man going.
So where I grew up on Long Island, there weren't many hills. So the only places you could sled were like the on-ramps to the LIE. So it is an adrenaline rush, because if you go a little too fast, you're going into the major highway.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was watching clips that Drew was showing on his show the other day. It was just people getting wrecked by cars on the side of the highway.
Yeah.
We see a few of those on the show here and there.
Yeah. Just watching the one kid just go flying after he's like jumping into a giant puddle on the side of the road. It's like, holy shit, what an idiot. But also like, I probably would have been there.
All right, guys, I'm fading. Let's get this intern in here. Pete Eckenroth, please.
We'll be
And we got Cowardly.
Hey, we don't pay Pete, right?
I don't pay anybody.
You should. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he just got this internship by way of David passing it on. So
only because David was on our show, so we had to quickly find a new intern. So,
shit, no, it's not David. I swear.
We got to get Pete on so that we can pass it down to one of the Alabama comics. But we got Cowardly.
Yeah, Drew, what makes you feel cowardly?
Okay. This is a loaded question. Are we talking like scared, like I see something and I'm frightened, or something that I'm frightened of on a deeper level? You know what I mean? Because like I guess spiders make me cowardly, but I don't think that's cool.
I think spiders is the kind of thing that I was thinking of, where it's like, if something was legitimately frightening and I was frightened by it, I wouldn't feel like a coward. But right. spiders offer no real danger. But every time I see one, I'm like, that's the part that makes me feel like a coward.
Yeah, I don't know if that, when I think cowardly, I think of like the lion from Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like the type of bitch shit he was doing.
Yeah,
what type of pussy shit was he doing?
If we did pull tags on this show, that's being like the name of the fucking episode.
Cowardly Lion was a bitch.
Dude, I would say up until like recently, because I'm 27 now, so I'd say at like 25, this changed for me, because I had an older friend tell me that I was crazy for this. But like talking to attractive girls, I was always like cowardly of.
Sure.
And I would always lower my own standards, because I was like, oh, she's too hot for me to just approach. And then one of my friends was like, dude, it's all the same. And then yeah. And then you realize it's all the same. So I still am afraid of beautiful women, but I think I've gotten better.
I agree with this in the sense that there was a certain part in my life where, like, I think it was around comedy, like when I started doing stand up, that like you just get more confident because you realize like, no, it's what's the problem? Like, what? I've done the worst thing. I've bombed at 2 a.m. at Fergie's. I like it's done.
That,
I can talk
that is
to
a
anyone.
Good point, because I think that was like a big connection for me, where I was like if you're uncomfortable talking to a girl one on one, and you bomb in that situation, that's whatever. But like, it sucks way more bombing in front of 30 people. Yeah. And like, it could be 10 hot girls in the audience that they all think you suck now. So,
yeah. You just cast a wider net. That's...
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that I think a lot of people experience around that age of like 25 pushing 30, where you just what the fuck? Was I so like, you're untying that knot that you had as a teenager of just the, you have to fake this confidence for so long. And then after a certain point, you're just like, I pay bills. I'm fine. What is the fucking problem?
But see, I had that lack of confidence for like every relationship. It didn't matter. Like, it was exacerbated by like attractive women because sex is cool. But like, I was bad at every type of relationship because I was just like, nobody wants to actually be talking to me. Like, why would anybody want to waste their time with this? Mm-hmm. But like, now I'm like, yeah, people are going to fucking waste their time with me. I don't care. I dare you to walk away. I'm here to waste your time.
Yeah, that's part of that power. That's why when people ask like about stand up, like, oh, how do you start? And like, how do you do this? Or like, what's the worst part about it? And I was like, well, I can tell you the best part about it is bombing. At least at this point in my life, where it's just like, I love to ride the atom bomb off of the plane crashing towards the earth because there's nothing you can do.
Right.
You have to learn to love that portion of it. And I think from that, like, you just immediately grow out of the, oh no, what are they going to say? What are they going to think? What are they going to do? Will they laugh? Will they do nothing? Will they just sit there complacent? That's the worst part about it. But like, if they can hate you, at least they're getting something. And then that just kind of goes into your everyday life of like, listen, I'm going to shoot my shot with this girl at the comedy club. She watched me bomb. It might work. Like, what is there to lose?
There's nowhere to go but up after someone sees your bum. Like,
oh, yeah. Dude, I have friends. No, my bad to cut you off. I have friends that I've seen violently bomb and then like still pull girls in the spot. I'm like, that's like a different level of confidence. Like, I would have went home, dude.
Yeah, even me now at like peak confidence isn't even close to that.
Yeah.
They're like, and like peak confidence is incredibly relative.
I remember before I was a engaged man, I was like at, I think it was a Shamu Boogaloo show. Which is, again, RIP that show. That was such a fun Philly show.
That was before my time, for sure.
Oh, man. It was great. It was Elena and Ofi ran a show in, like, Elena's backyard. The first show I went there...
It was on Temple's campus in, like, a concrete backyard. It was wild.
It was... Oh, and it was, like, the first time I ever went there, I was, like, new to comedy. I showed up. Elena was like, oh, my God. Hey, George, it's so nice of you to come. There's drinks in the fridge and everything. And, like, I distinctly remember walking in, and Brandon Gorin was reading tarot cards for Shaner, and Shaner was just sobbing uncontrollably across the table. It was the most, like, I was like, where the fuck am I? It was the weirdest
really
party in the world.
Tarot.
Yeah. So he got like Shaner to start sobbing because he was like, oh, that's that card. Let me tell you about what that means. And then like he would leave and take a lap and be like, I don't know how to do tarot. And then walk back inside the house.
I would believe Brandon Gorin more than probably anybody in Philly comedy if he started reading me tarot cards.
Yeah.
He looks like he knows what they mean.
Yeah.
He's like, at least anytime spent time he did
with them.
Yeah. Anytime he did a reading, he would sit people down and be like, all right, I'm going to do something. I'm going to make a lot of, assumptions about your life. And also this isn't real. like he just like would warn people. But I remember going to that show, walking around doing silly bits. Like I wasn't performing. I was just there because like I got invited to a party. That's how like I viewed it. Cause when I was in like first starting in Philly standup, I knew no one. It was just showing up and then like seeing who would let me sit next to them at the open mic. And that's how I made friends.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like high school lunch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, and again, you revert back to that. And it's probably right around 25, 26 where you're like, listen, man, you got to get over this anxiety and agita and cowardice. Cause this is hitter. Like you can't just sit in the back. I've seen so many comedians just sit in the back and not talk to anyone. And they don't do comedy anymore. Hey,
that's me.
But so my point with bringing Boogaloo up is that like, I was walking around just hanging out, having a good time. I didn't necessarily bomb or anything, but like no one knows who I am. And then I got a girl's number at the end of the night. Like I have no idea how it happened, but it was just like, just given to the inhibitions of just existing. Like you're going to make an ass of yourself. And statistically half these people might think it's funny.
Right. And also statistically more than half of them are also making an ass of themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why I miss comedy so much.
Ass competition.
Yeah. It's just asses. It's just a group of like-minded individuals all sharing that cowardice that we're talking about and then just letting it go in front of the people that they can at least feign comfortability with.
Yeah, dude, comedy is like junior college. I feel like it's like all the people like bringing it back to high school. It's like all the people who thought they were funny at the high school lunch table all meet up with the other people who were funny at their high school's lunch table. Now they're all just in this junior college environment where like you want to get to actual college.
Yeah, you want that transfer. You want them to take you on. But
come on. Let me do this. Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. I feel like that's exactly what that is.
Yeah, the South House mic is the last chance you of Philly comedy.
I have to do that. I'm boosted now. I can do whatever I want. I'm unstoppable. I'm going to Philly for a weekend and making an ass out of myself and doing the same jokes that I've
just
done for 5 years.
Reminding people that you're
an ass.
Let's
go. There's a thing up in... this episode's already going to be out by the time, but last Thursday when this episode aired, there was a Crockpot comedy. It's like the 4th anniversary of Crockpot comedy in Jersey City. It's a great mic. If anyone around here is listening and you want to go check out some real good comedy in Jersey City, go for it. Crockpot. It's
like as long as we're plugging things that happened last Thursday, I had a great set on Meg's show.
I hope you did.
It's going to be my first time performing this year, which is insane. They're like, I've basically taken January off by accident.
I got a memory up on my phone, by the way, of the last show I did before the pandemic, and it was fucking Republican Club.
Oh, nice. I hope that one eventually comes back. It's not officially dead. I love that show.
I don't think that bar exists. There's no fucking way that bar.
Oh, it's still there.
How? How?
It's hanging on. It's hanging on.
No, is it an actual Republican club?
It was probably in the 50s or 60s, and now it is a divey strip club in the middle of. Yeah, it's right around the corner from Melrose.
Okay. I know exactly where that is. Yeah.
It's literally when it becomes residential, just up the street from Melrose, and it's just in one of the houses, basically. It is a speakeasy strip club.
You walk in, you do comedy. The men that are already there are like, we did not want this. We wanted women dancing on poles. You like do stand up on the stage leaning up against the pole. It's such a fun, chaotic show. But it was also one of the few shows that I brought my now fiance, Play the Noise, and her friend. And her friend too, and they were like, what the fuck does he do on the weekends?
this is comedy.
it's nothing better than those pop-up shows where people have no idea that comedy's coming.
Like, that was my favorite.
Now you're no longer listening to the football game you came here for. Listen to comedians. They're like, wait, what?
Oh man, every time I go out to like the suburbs for a show, I'm so sure I'm gonna compete with sports.
Yep.
Yeah, every single time. Yeah.
I did one at
Rivals Sports Bar in Easton for, I forget what football game was on, but it was packed. Like there was not a seat open, and everyone was listening to the game, and they just turned the sound off, and they were like, all right, here comes the comedians. People started going nuts. They were like, what the fuck,
man?
I think that was my favorite part of doing the mic at Jose Pistola's was, they would start getting ready, and then Betty or John Deary or someone would get on the stage and be like, all right, we're going to get like 5 minutes. We're going to start the open mic comedy night. And you watched frantically people just in droves, like someone pulled the fire alarm. They were like, we need our checks now.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I have never seen a table look at their waitress right after they ordered and be like, why didn't you tell us?
Yeah. How did you keep this to yourself?
No, I did one. They all act like it was a sting operation too. Yeah. They're like, you fucking set us up for this.
I did one where I had to compete with the Super Bowl replay. And like at one point I was like, oh man, did everybody watch the Super Bowl? It was a great game the other day. And like the place, everybody was clapping. And I was like, cool, then why are you watching it again now? Like, watch the show, please.
Yeah. Only in Philadelphia could they still air that 4 years later and pack a bar out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah,
it's an event.
Yeah. I remember, you know, you'd go to bars in like Asheville or even in the city and they'd do like a movie night situation. And it's like, I don't understand how you can pack a bar watching Casablanca while you eat. Like,
I used to go to a place. It was every Thursday. He would just show martial arts movies. And when he got tired of showing martial arts movies, he would show British like sitcoms. It was the best. I loved that bar.
Sounds like a great time. That's martial arts.
That makes sense. Like somebody kicking ass on screen, but like if you go to a bar and like Back to the Future's on, you're like, what are we doing? Like,
why are you watch this at home? Go watch this at home. It's on any other. It's on a channel you have at home.
I mean, not to bring Rockstar up again, but last time I watched Rockstar, I was at a rock show at a bar, and they just had Rockstar on, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to sit and watch Rockstar because this doesn't make sense. There's no reason the TV should be on at this rock show. It's just like a legit rock venue. Like they just had Rockstar on at the bar.
It's just a thing where it's like age back 20 years from now. I would even say, like 20 years. It is the year 2000. In the year 2000. People, that's how, like, no one really had cell phones. No one, like, that was the bar culture. If a movie was on, you could get away with sitting at the bar and watching whatever movie was on the TV behind the bar.
I was still Rockstar.
It's probably still Rockstar. It just doesn't, like, that doesn't need to happen anymore. I understand if you want to leave sports on because you can kind of mindlessly tune in and out of sports. So, like, that makes sense. But I don't I don't know if that culture exists where it's like, okay, don't worry, we're going to put a TV in the bar. So this way people will watch the movie and drink more because they'll be invested in the movie we're showing behind the bar. Like, you're going to sit there, but it's not for the movie.
Yeah, I'm just here to get drunk.
Yeah. And if that involves me getting drunk watching Mark Wahlberg go from singer of a cover band to singer of the band you're covering.
It's the Judas Priest story. It's a real thing.
Wait, no, not in the Journey. Journey did that.
No, I swear I'm right. Journey has also had a bunch of lead singers, but I swear it's the Judas Priest story.
Judas Priest is just Rob Halford.
Yes, I know. But at one point, I think it wasn't or whatever, but who cares? You ready to take a break?
I'm finding out. We're coming back from this break, and I'm going to be upset because I love Judas Priest.
Hey, I'm Danny.
I'm John.
We host Blanket and Covers, the show where we cover the covers.
Have you ever thought about trying to find every single version of Angel of the Morning or Careless Whispers?
That's an us thing, I think.
Yeah. If that's something that you think you would be into, I think you should definitely check out our show. We think that by listening to every version of a song that has ever been done, can like gain something new.
Yeah, each week we do a deep dive through a band's catalog or one specific song. Season one is out there now. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Hey everybody, Danny here with plugs. You can find Drew every Monday with his handful of shows at Raven Lounge. They are a great time. Definitely go check that out. You can also check out his podcast, Durag and the Deer Tag, that he hosts with Naeem Ali. You can find George and I at Feel Feelings Pod. On the Wasted Robot side of things, you can get the Meg Getz album anywhere that is available. Streaming, downloading, buy it, however you want to do it. Go rate it, review it, share it with everybody. I think that's it for the plugs this week. Back to the show.
And we're back.
It's hard to Google rockstar Judas Priest because it's just like, yeah, Rob Halford, we get it.
Yeah, Judas Priest singer.
I saw Journey at the New York State Fair in like 2005 or six. And
was that with the Filipino guy? Cause that guy rules. Dude, that guy is so good.
Dude, it was insane. Cause the rest of the band is like 70 years old and like can barely move. And this dude was literally did a backflip. Cause like the drummer was like elevated from everyone else. He like climbed on top of the drummer's thing and did a backflip in the middle of the song. And everyone else is like, got arthritis in every bone. It was incredible to see.
Oh no, it wasn't Journey. It was Judas Priest. But like, you are right. First off, that like they did have a couple people swap in and out. So I'll give you that.
Yes.
But also, I think it was Judas Priest recently. They had a video of the guy playing guitar. He's kind of an older guy, but he's shredding, and he's like got the leather vest with studs on it, and he's playing, and there's spikes coming off his wrist. Like, he's looking like
weird to still rock that at 70.
Yeah, no, he's a leather daddy, you know, he's just living his life. But while he's soloing, you can hear him, you can see him like wince a little bit, and you kind of feel like, oh, he's just feeling it. No, he had a massive coronary and like began to bleed inside of his body cavity, and then just kept on playing two more songs. It was like, I think I need to go to the hospital
because his rock and roll
heart exploded. And you watch it happen. You watch this man go like, ooh.
That's weird.
while still just going at it, hitting every note, not a single wrong note.
I don't think I have that type of muscle memory for anything.
Yeah.
They're like, my brain will give way to coronary.
Yeah. Dude, my ear could itch and it throws off my whole equilibrium.
So like,
I'm like, hold on, I gotta scratch this. If I had a heart attack, it'd be over.
Yeah. I mean, I got the booster, and then as soon as I sat down, they're like, why don't you sit down, wait 10 minutes, because they do that like wait period for it. And as soon as I sat down, I was like, I don't feel good. I'm dizzy now. Like, all it took was a shot in the arm. 30 seconds later, I was like, oh no. It's just, it's an immediate thing. I'm not built for war is what I'm saying. Our grandfathers are good men.
I'm the opposite with shots. Like I've freaked people out, like taking blood and stuff, because like when they're going to put a needle in my arm, I just stare at it and I just like watch the whole process happen.
Oh, you're insane. And,
The one lady, she legit kept missing because she was nervous because I was watching it. And she's like, "Can you just look away, please?" And I was like, "Yeah, because I don't want you to like take all of my blood by accident." But like,
yeah, because that's how it works. She turns on a Hot Wheels motor and it just sucks all the blood out of your body quicker.
Well, I just picture it like she just keeps poking the same artery in different spots, and it's like I'm just like perforated at that point.
Wait, so would you say?
We're not scientists on here, but
speak for yourself.
All right. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. If I prick my thumb, it bleeds. If I cut like any part of my arm, it bleeds. So why do they need to hit the vein?
It's just the closest part to it, I think.
That doesn't make sense, though.
No,
that's speculation.
I know, like, that.
Why can't they draw blood from my ass every time?
I don't know why. Like, I know why they have to do it, like, with a needle, but I don't know why they have to do it in my arm. I don't know that part. Because, like, yeah, with the needle, because they have to get it from beneath the surface before oxygen can, like, combines with it.
Well, that makes sense. But, like, last time I checked, my whole body's got blood.
Yeah, the wear part of it, I don't know.
It's got to be something where, like, it's a larger vein on your arm. Like, it runs through a certain part of your arm there. And so, like, the needle can fit in it, I imagine. But also, I guess because you work it a lot, like, that's why they make you, like, squeeze the thing in your hand so it kind of gets the blood pumping to it, maybe? I don't know.
This is my new conspiracy.
We don't even have blood.
Yeah.
it's all just a conspiracy to make your left arm weaker for a couple moments after you go to the doctor.
That's it. Dan, would you say that getting blood obviously doesn't make you cowardly, but
no. I'm not generally a cowardly person, but like when I think
you're afraid of boats, we discussed it on the first episode.
Yeah, but I still get on boats and like,
and you shake violently. It's the first time I ever saw you perform. You went on boat mic and I watched a man fear for his life on a docked boat.
There may have been other things altering my perception in that moment. I try not to say it explicitly on the show, but there may have been other things in my system at the time.
He was twitchy. That's all I'm saying.
But yeah, like I'm very good at facing my fears, but there's a lot of stuff where I think about, like, I always get kind of annoyed with myself when I use comedy as examples in this, but like when it's like, I barely do comedy and I'm good at it, but I don't get to do it a lot because I barely show people that I do it. Mm. And like, that's my own fault. Like that's my own cowardice of like, I'm not putting myself out there enough for the world to decide. I'm deciding that the world just doesn't care. That like, I'm in my own way of that. And it's fully based on cowardice.
Do you think that's done? Like, do you think you do that on purpose? Kind of realizing it.
It's not on purpose as much as it's like self-destructive, where it's like, here's a thing I like, but instead of going and facing the consequences of being bad at it, I decide beforehand that I'm going to eliminate that and just kind of not do it as much as I should do it.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. That is like a form of self-sabotage. And that's interesting that, like, because I have a similar thing. I mean, I've done it with music and I've done it with comedy. Like, I make excuses for myself not to get out there and do it in Jersey City. I mean, I think I have a viable excuse of, like, I moved to Jersey City adjacent in the middle of a pandemic where I don't know many people in this area or in this comedy scene. But at the same time, like, all it takes is just, like, a hair more effort to, like, put it out there. To write one more tweet promoting the show, or like to you know, do one more shout out on a podcast, or do someone else's podcast, or just like to do something to promote yourself, and then it's just you don't bring yourself to do it.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm in my own way as much as I am, because like I'm at a point now where I'm so comfortable on stage that I hate doing the annoying parts, but I also know that I have to do the annoying parts, but like that's the part of it that I just keep shutting myself down with, that I got to stay in my own way of like, it's definitely a fear of succeeding. Cause anything I've ever succeeded at, I get bored with it very quickly. That like, when I reach a level that's something I can actually market, I'm done with it. Like I'm tired of it very quickly. And it happened with animation. It happened with like any other art I've ever made. I think there's part of it that like, I'm scared of that happening to comedy, because comedy has like brought so much cool shit to my life. Mm. But also like, who cares? Like what, like, why stop myself from doing this? Like I've been doing it long enough that like, I'm clearly going to keep doing it, but I'm still in that like old mindset of like, well, if I get to the point that I get bored with it, then like, what do I have now? I think is kind of it.
Yeah. You're convinced on like moving on to the next thing then. Cause if it goes the same way of the buffalo as animation has, or as like music has, or anything really, is like, you need something to fill that void.
Yeah. It's like, I've gone through photography, through drawing, through animation, through like making videos. Like I've gone through all of that stuff, and like it's just gone. Like that stuff just gone now. Like I dabble every now and then back in those things that I used to do, but like they're just gone. And I'm tired of finding new things, so I keep getting in my own way of like, I need to keep the things I have, so I don't have to keep finding new things.
So you think subconsciously you need something that you're not succeeding at, but you know you're good at? Does that make sense?
I think there is kind of that. You know,
like, That's what it sounds like.
I have such a hard time explaining it even to myself, because...
Yeah, I'm trying to understand.
There's no logical reason that I should keep getting in my own way, but that's all I'm doing.
Because most people that have like that same issue, like aren't good at comedy or aren't like comfortable doing comedy. And you sound like you're both. So yeah, you are good at comedy. I've seen you do comedy. So like,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah,
I think that comes. It's got to be. And I hate to relay this, because like it's just that. The TikToks that are served to me, but it's got to be some sort of ADD ADHD side effect of like, I'm done, time to move on. And then like, you found something that you're passionate about that you want to keep around, because like it's surrounded you with cool shit and cool people that you want to be around, but at the same time, you know the track record of it, so now there's an obstacle, when there wasn't really an obstacle for animation or photography or anything.
Well, that makes sense too, because how long have you been doing comedy?
8 years, I guess. There was a year in the middle, like the very beginning, that I didn't do it, but since I started, it was 8 years.
And do you think like this is like a newer thing, like within the past couple years?
I think it's a thing where I finally figured out how to be funny on stage, and now it's like either do the work or don't, because like, right. I don't have the jokes that match like how I know how to be funny on stage yet. I've just figured out how to make the old jokes that I hate work. So like there's definitely that obstacle, and like even the stuff I've written that I think would work is much more personal, because like all the stuff I have is very goofy and silly and not very introspective or bringing a lot of me to the stage. So I think there's also a fear of that, of like what would happen if I actually did that with the jokes that I want to tell.
Man. Dan needs a whole Nanette special.
Yeah.
That's what Dan needs. He needs to break down those boundaries. He needs halfway through. He's like, you know, funny bit, apple rolling down the hill. Ha ha. So anyway.
Yeah.
This one time I was sledding.
The world needs more Nanettes.
Yeah. That's how I felt.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, Dan, I hope you get over it.
Yeah. just like anything, it's just a matter of doing it. It's like, I was afraid of heights and I went up to a tall building. Like, it's just a matter of doing it. Like,
no.
Dan, I prescribe you 10 Xanax a day. It'll cure everything.
It wouldn't be enough.
Yeah. I would need a big kick first, and then I could probably come down to 10.
I am very excited for my insurance to finally kick in for this new job, because I do want to go to the doctor and be like, listen, I have this ADD thing. TikTok told me I would like some Adderall, please, because I think it'll help. And I know it's going to make me cry, because not that like I'd be hyper emotional. It's just be like, oh, this is how normal people are all the time. Like, this is my regulation pill. Fantastic. If I have to be honest with my cowardly choice, I don't know, spiders. Anyway, what do the people say on the internet?
Nah, you got to give me more than that.
Spiders are scary. I watched a whole video about a guy incubating a bunch of tarantula babies, and it was terrifying, but I couldn't look away. They start off white and gooby. Like, he pulled out an egg sac and he like incubated them in a separate thing. And there's probably like 30 of them all crammed in that egg sac. And then they start like molting and stuff, and they start turning brown and shit. And they're like little itty bitty spiders, and they keep on getting bigger. And I watched a 3-minute video about him incubating tarantulas. And I hate spiders. And I watched the whole thing.
Dude, I hate spiders more than anything. Like, I almost can't even watch videos of them on the internet. I hate them that much where they scare me on the screen.
Did you ever watch that movie, Eight-Legged Freaks? It kind of helps you with spider.
Dude, I think that's one of the things that ruined them for me.
I just,
like, they could get 30 feet tall.
Yeah, fuck, they can get 30 feet tall, and then like a motocross dude kicks one in the face and it screams fuck. Fantastic. Fantastic. Listen, watch that movie again if you can. He like kicks it and you hear it go fuck.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've never seen that movie because I just assumed it was bad, but now
it is bad, but it's incredible.
I might need to investigate.
There are a few movies that like my stepdad, when he moved into the house and was like, there's a couple movies we're not watching anymore. We're not watching Eight-Legged Freaks. We're not watching Mystery Men. And we're not watching, what was the third one? He just was like, we cannot keep watching this movie. It's terrible.
That sounds like no fun.
No.
Mystery Men rules.
Yeah, no, he hated Mystery Men. He's like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, that's the point.
Yeah. I think that's what they were going for.
not spiders. But if we can get serious, I, starting a new job and everything, I find myself very cowardly when I'm in the unknown. Does that make sense? Like,
do you find yourself afraid that you're like actually an adult now?
Yeah, I think that's a core basis of it, is now that I have a job that pays me a decent living wage, that I'm planning a wedding and I'm saving for a wedding and all this stuff is kind of compiling on itself at 29. It's this unknowing thing, at least when in Philly, in comedy, it was like, cool, I can steal people's food when they're done with it at the open mic. And I can, so that's what I eat. Yeah. And, you know, a PBR is $3. So that's dinner. And I get to be around people that I love. And it was like, it's this core part of my life where I think about it and go like, everything was right from like 26 to 28. Or like 25 to 28.
I went through that basically at the same time you were, and I'm considerably older than you.
Yeah. And it's just like you got used to it. And now that there's this unknown, now I have a desk job. I have like a chair with lumbar support. it's this weird aging thing where I don't know what's ahead. And I know it's a good thing. I know that like, with that ahead is stability and comfortability, but the unknowing of it all makes me very sheepish and very cowardly of like, am I doing the right thing? Is it worth it? You have these like things that kind of roll around in your head all the time of like, is really doing this podcast my connection to comedy, or is this just doing the lap because I get to see Dan and a fun person every week, or is it something that brings me joy? But it's that familiarity versus everything else in my life being the unknown.
See, I love the unknown though. Like I'm more willing to do something I've never done before than something I've done even once before. Like if the choice is something brand new or anything else, I'm doing brand new.
Yeah, I don't know if I would. Maybe it's because like for large parts of my life, I didn't always have that. Like the brand new was always point A. Like, mm-hmm. Junior year of high school, my parents moved to South Jersey. So I move in with like my friends and my aunt and uncle for my senior year of high school. So all of a sudden there's no one around. And pretty much since then, for the next 11, 12 years, I just every day had to be new. Like every day was like, how am I going to get to school? Cause I don't have enough money for gas. So like, let me get someone to drive me to school. And then it escalates into, oh, I'm touring in a band and I've made just enough money to cover one hotel at the end of the night. And then after that, I either have to go live on my friend's couch in New Jersey or I have to drive to North Carolina. And I just drove to North Carolina because it was the new version of it. And then I was stuck there for 2 years. And it was like, okay, how do I survive in North Carolina? Like, how do I adapt to this whole new environment of that I'm not used to being a person from, went to college in Northern New Jersey and grew up in Connecticut and Long Island. Like those are totally different worlds. And it just keeps on jumping on itself. And now that like, I don't have to do that and like stability is an option, that's scary.
Do you feel like a coward because you're choosing the choice that is like stationary?
Yes.
Because there was a stretch in my life where I was just going, 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 going. And then when I had the option of like stopping for a little bit, that felt like the worst choice. And in hindsight, it was the best choice.
Oh, yeah.
But in the moment, making that choice felt awful because it was like, but this isn't me. I'm not somebody who stops and like thinks about what my life could be. Like, I just go day, day, day. Like, that's it.
Sitting in a room in a house that my fiance owns. It's not my house. and thinking about, you know, like, oh, okay, things are comfortable. Things are nice. It's terrifying. It's weirdly terrifying that it's like, in hindsight, I'm going to be like, yeah, that was great. These are the best times of your life. Like I got to, you know, like enjoy this time I have, but in the moment, it is a constant panic attack of like, oh man, I'm stagnating. I'm doing something wrong.
I mean, that's similar to like having a fear of dying though. Like it's true. Always like the unknown. Like, I guess that's like a day to day thing. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
although I'm fine with dying, I'm like super okay with like, cool. I didn't remember what happened before I was born. I'm not going to after I die. This is somebody else's problem.
That's true.
Are you passing this on to a new consciousness?
Do you believe in reincarnation?
You know, I have this wonky theory where I'm like there are certain animalistic responses we have, like fight or flight, and that's got to be something from our past inherited memory that tells us that we need to do that. Mm-hmm. So there's like part of it's like pseudoscience-y in a way. Do I think I was a dog and a frog and Anne Frank and Gerard Depardieu and like all just I've lived through everyone's lives slowly, like this shared consciousness. Again, back to the beginning of our show. It's fun to think about. I don't know if I'm completely on board.
It'd be cool if you were Anne Frank.
That'd be really cool if I was Anne Frank, right?
Yeah.
I work for a company that's based in Germany and I get to go see her house when we go there. It'd be sick.
I guess just want to throw out there,
Gerard Depardieu is still alive, so that one probably isn't.
You can know. I'm saying, like, you can even have consciousness of all the people that are around. Like, there's this whole theory that, like, I have lived as Drew, I've lived as Dan, I've lived as Casey, I've lived as God, I've lived as a bum, I've lived like we're all a part of this collective consciousness that is all part of this weird tingle in the back of our cerebellum that is just our shared existence.
So is that saying that like when people die it just gets reshuffled?
Yeah.
I don't hate that idea.
Yeah, I don't hate it either.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Right? Well, you're the one that smoked 2 blunts the entire podcast.
Yeah.
You're like stoked on this.
I'm believing everything, dude. I was an ant at one point. That's what I'm thinking. I was a fire ant.
Yeah, I do buy into that like collective consciousness thing that like everything is connected in one way or another because we're all made of the same stuff just because it formed me into a human body and it formed something else into a tree and like into this microphone. And like, just because it formed something different in this moment doesn't mean that like the next time it gets kind of shed and reformed somewhere else, that it's not going to be me or be part of something else that's live now instead of something that wasn't alive before. Like, it's all just electricity constantly moving. Like,
electricity and water just running around everywhere. It's there's this whole, you know, it's like people always say, like, I guess they use it for more rationalizing ghosts, but it's like our bodies contain energy. We build up this kinetic energy inside us over time, and energy cannot be destroyed. It just is released in some other way. If I pull my fingers back, they have to go out the other way. They can't just constantly close back in on themselves. There has to be a release. But that energy doesn't die. It's just being focused on a different spot. So what happens after that? That shared electricity has got to be something. I think we solved it on this episode, guys.
Yeah.
I think we did it.
I'm so a believer.
Now that we've solved all that, do you want to see what the people said makes them feel cowardly? Yo,
how many people are going to write the cowardly dog? Courage, my boy.
We had someone say thrill rides.
Okay.
Which I get.
I'm not we need emotional shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell them about, like, are you cowardly about the shared collective unconsciousness of all human life?
Yeah. Is it because you are also that roller coaster?
Yeah. What about the roller coaster of our own existence? Let's Steve see, Bickle have, would write shit like that.
Yeah, right. Enemy of the show. Let's see. We have, when I have to bail on someone or tell bad news and I sweat about it for an hour or two just before doing it.
Good answer.
That's a great answer.
That's where I'm looking for this. Yeah.
I'm bad at that. I'm like, I try and keep everybody happy for so long that it ends up crashing, if that makes sense.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's the plate spinning thing of like, when I finally let one fall, all of this is gonna fall.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I drag situations on way too long. Like, yeah, it's not good. But it's like at the end of the day, it's like good hearted. But I know it's a piece of shit thing to do.
Oh yeah, nobody who does that doesn't mean well.
Yeah,
like it's just a matter of like trying to manage people's feelings, but like kind of forgetting that people are capable of handling bad news and change.
Yeah. Damn. Crazy. We're figuring it out here, dude.
We're solving it.
This is so much better than roller coasters.
What is this? The 98th episode. We can quit this episode. Yeah. We'll never reach 100. Cause we solved it. We solved the feelings.
Let's see. We have, when you turn off a light in one room and have to sprint to safety in the next lit room.
Sure. I saw Darkness Falls. That movie fucked me up when I was a kid.
Oh my God. The Tooth Fairy movie.
How crazy. Like, honestly, good for them for turning such like a B horror movie into like, okay, we're going to make it the Tooth Fairy. Like, that's the creature. Fantastic.
Yeah. I saw that movie with a girl who had lost her two front teeth in a car accident. It was just a hard thing to not keep reminding her of during the movie.
And every time she was like gasp, a whistle would happen. Anyway, no, Drew, what were you going to say about Darkness Falls?
That's not a bad one, but that's what they made flashlights and weapons for.
Yep.
So you don't got to be too careful. Get the bat or the gun or whatever you got to protect your house and a flashlight and you'll be okay.
We'll be good.
Yeah. Part of me wants to like spread that out to like the more metaphysical sense of it, of like that you're leaving your one safe area and there's all this darkness before you get to the next one. But I know who wrote it. That's not what they meant. The unimaginable lengths that I will go to avoid confrontation.
Oh yeah. Fuck confrontation. Yep. That's the worst. Only time I've ever been like, that was okay, acceptable confrontation was at Raven when I had to throw somebody out. And I was like, nope, they shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, people were like, hey, George, We weren't here to back you up. We were using you as a shield.
Yep.
Dude, as somebody who's had to throw people out of Raven now, I agree 100%. That's a time where I'm like, dude, it's 1:50 in the morning. If you don't shut the fuck up, yeah, we'll get you out of here. Yeah. But, dude, I think that the fear of confrontation leads back to the second one, like the fear of giving people bad news.
It's like, oh, yeah, it's all they come from the same spot. Like, yeah,
100%.
There's fear in watching the bomb explode. I just read this really great quote, actually. I'm reading a book about the history of like horror films, and it was breaking down like what makes a good horror film. And Alfred Hitchcock explained that like action is people sitting around a table and it explodes. Suspense is seeing the people talking at the table, and then it pans down and you see the bomb underneath it, and you just focus on the bomb while they're talking and none of them know. And a good horror movie has both of those sequences. I think the cowardly thing is A, like confrontation, the bomb exploding, but it's also cowardly in literally putting the bomb on the table and then plugging your ears as you back up.
Yeah.
Like that's almost worse.
That's the thing where you're like pretending like you don't have a bomb and like, no, it's actually a stuffed animal that I'm here to deliver. like those are the parts. And like, it's when you catch yourself doing it that like it feels so cowardly, because it's natural to not want to confront somebody. Like that's natural. But it's when you catch yourself going to those insane lengths to avoid it that you're like, I'm a fucking coward.
Yeah. No, like there's also like in between those times where you could confront someone or you could just say and move on because you're on a 4-hour flight back from Florida and the man sitting next to you just said something mildly racist about the town of Fort Lee, New Jersey. I'm just going to let that slide. I'm not having this argument with you for 4 hours on a plane.
I want to know the whole story. Anyway,
I'll tell you off mic because it has a racial slur in it. Okay. Where are you looking?
My door just started slowly opening.
Oh, great. The new apartment's haunted.
Yeah, I just assume we have ghosts here. It's fine.
Sick.
Driving when it's icy out.
Sure.
Common, yeah.
But see, I kind of took that the opposite way, though, because like, if I'm going to go drive and I know it's icy, I don't feel like a coward. It's like, I have I've something to accomplish here and there's treacherous terrain, but I'm going to go face it. Like, I don't feel like a coward in that moment. Mm. I feel scared as hell, but like, I don't feel like a coward.
Sure. I mean, I guess it's the pre beforehand. Like, we had a big ice storm in New Jersey just a couple days ago. And a lot of people were like, no, I'm not going to work or anything. Like a bunch of people I know called out. It was gone by 10:30 and like, you could have made it in.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that to like that pity on anyone, but it's also like, I don't want to risk it. The cowardice and not even risking it, even though it's like 40 degrees outside at this point.
Yeah.
That I get.
Let's see. We have a bit of a story on this one.
Oh boy.
I once saw a dude beating his kids in Staples and did nothing. I rationalized it in the moment. What are you going to do? Kill him? He's just going to take the kid home and take it out on him, which is true. But it's more that I just froze from inaction. And he said, still thinks about that kid. That's part of the bummer.
I don't think you should feel cowardly about that. You can exhibit regret, but that is a shocking thing to witness. And you can very easily go into a shock state at that point and go like, I don't know what to do. It's the reason why it's deer in the headlights. Like, you're not supposed to see someone beating their children in a Staples. You're not supposed to see, you know, the deer get hit by the car with nothing to, like, you can't. Sometimes your body just shuts down and says, you don't know how to handle this situation. Don't.
Yeah. I need more on the story. Cause if the kid was just like getting in an office chair and spinning around and then he started beating the shit out of him, that's a lot. Like, that might be too much. But kids are a little annoying. I got a couple smackings and a Wegmans before, dude, and I might have deserved some of them.
I feel like there's only so much trouble you can cause in a Staples, but now that...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, grocery store, there's options. I could fucking start eating bagels before we pay for them and shit.
You want to go free the lobsters or something? Yeah, you get a beating if you take a lobster.
Just picture somebody in Staples like frisbeeing manila folders. Like, all right, great. Now just pick them up. Like, whatever.
That's where I was like, the most fun I could think of in Staples would be office chair related as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, get in the chair and like push your brother around or something. But
what's that like fancy office chair that people get all the time? It's like some dude's name.
Oh, I don't know. You're the one with the office job.
Yeah, talk to us, Mr. Lumbar Support.
Yo, I got lumbar support. Don't even front my guy. This is Corinthian leather, okay, that I'm sitting in currently. This is nice. Found it in a dumpster.
Corinthian. Not worth it. Don't worry.
Nope. Move on.
I chose to leave this one for last, despite it coming in pretty early in the proceedings. Indoor centipede type insects.
Indoor centipede. Oh, you mean like the fuzzy ones with all the legs with the antennae?
Yeah, those things with the little antenna that just sticks straight out to the side that you're like, I don't know what those are there for. They look like legs, but they're not legs. Yeah.
I made one of those in that.
Those things bite.
What was that Easy Bake Oven for boys?
The Creepy Crawler one?
Yeah, I made one of them in my Creepy Crawly light bulb oven. The boy light bulb oven.
Yeah, I saw one of those in my new apartment, and I was like, oh, man, you're here too? Like, I thought I got away from you guys.
Nah, they're everywhere, man. I have someone that lives in a basement, and every once in a while, I got to push my bed back against the wall. Don't look back there. Whole tribes of gross insects live underneath your bed.
Fuck that.
They were here before you, and they'll be here when you leave.
Yeah, they'll eat. They will feast and thrive on my bones as I turn to dust. Nothing is real, and all there is the sweet release of death. And with Drew, that, thanks so much for being
Drew, thanks
on the
for
show.
Being here.
Amen. No, thank you guys for having me on. I learned a lot today.
Learned that both me and Dan have horrible depression that we need to work through on our own.
We cracked a lot of different codes here today, and some of them were real, some of them were fake. We'll all find out together in the end.
Yep. Well, I will talk to you guys soon. I'm going to go lay down because my back hurts already. This vaccine is killing me.
So much for your lumbar support.
Yeah.
Feel Feelings is a Wasted Robot production. Editing done by Dan Getz. Music by George Bruderman. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at FeelFeelingsPod, and even leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/FeelFeelings. If you're ever feeling any heavy emotions and feel like there's nowhere to turn to, please don't hesitate to reach out to us or to any of the resources in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation from the Wasted Robot Network. For more information and links to other shows, please visit www.wastedrobotrecords.com/podcasts.
Lauren's such a professional show.